And we are recording.
Hell yeah.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Retired Mosher Podcast. Go ahead. There it is. I am your host, James Brizuela, otherwise known as the Retired Mosher. I have a very special guest here with me today. She is the co-creator slash co-host of the Horrible People's Podcast, as well as the queen of the Horrible People's Network, Miss Alex Webster.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Here at the Retired Mosher Podcast, I am not afraid of alternative opinions. I am not afraid of differing opinions. I am more open to civil discourse about things that I do not like. So today is a very special episode that I am going to be aptly titling the emo special, because that is what we are talking about today.
Welcome to Emo Corner, hosted by your resident emo, pop punk, etc. expert, me, Alex Webster.
There you go. I will say that I loathe about 99.9% of the music that exists in this genre, save for a few albums that are near and dear to my heart that we will be talking about.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't like this genre whatsoever. I will be open about that. So metalheads, avert your ears and eyes. hate watchers, turn the volume up and stare intently at your screen.
Sometimes you could be like me. You little column A, little column B.
You know, there you go. And also, you know, people who have an open mind, stay tuned. Just keep listening and watching, because, you know, maybe these are bands that you grew up listening to. Maybe the bands you never heard of. Maybe you're getting into the emo genre. Maybe you're about 15 years late to it. I don't know. Whatever the case may be.
Not even 15. I would say 20.
20? There you go. See? I don't even know how old the emo genre is, so to speak.
Well, also, it depends on, like, this, it depends on the era, right? Because you have like your 90s emo, which I know next to nothing about. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even know 90s emo exists.
Exactly. Like there, but it's a lot more like, the like brand new vibe or okay. Yeah, you know, that okay. ish vibe. I have a couple albums as like not honorable mentions, but like examples.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like not as poppy as like Taking Back Sunday. Like it's like a little bit more the edge of like where goth somehow branched and birthed the abomination we now know as emo music.
I mean, that makes sense first and foremost. And also I don't really consider Taking Back Sunday to be that poppy, to be honest, of all
but no that's bands. What I'm saying, like when you picture like Taking Back Sunday, like it's not super poppy, but like no. Okay, girl. When you imagine Taking Back Sunday, like it's not super poppy, but like think even less poppy than Taking Back Sunday. That's like your 90s
gotcha,
music.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Again, I don't know anybody listening or watching. If you happen to know these bands, please let me know. I'm sure Alex here knows them. Maybe she doesn't. Maybe there's some you know about. Anyway. Yeah. So we've had multiple conversations about the genre and also my miscategorizing of what is scene music comparative to what emo music is or whatever, or the rawr music, if you will. I'm wholly ignorant on this. Sure. And so to me, all of these bands are in the same thing, but I will say, okay, so I don't know. This is probably going to be madly incorrect, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
So, you know, metal has a ton of subgenres. There's like so many.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
I don't think emo has that many, but I know that there's differences, right?
Yes. Totally. Okay.
Yeah. So my limited knowledge of this genre,
I wouldn't go so far to say that it's as many as metal, because like every day I feel like I hear a new metal subgenre and I'm like, all right, good for you. That's fine. but with emo music, I think emo as an umbrella is a great term because it is a little bit of a catch-all in the way that, like, I think all scene music is probably emo music, but not all emo music is scene music. Or, like, I think, like, pop punk and scene music, like, kind of delineate just a little bit. Like, there's a Venn diagram. I almost considered making a Venn diagram to present to you.
That would have helped because I'm already lost. I'm like, what? I don't even know.
Sure. Yeah.
So, okay. So here, the funny thing that's always been the misconception, or rather the miscategorizing of metal music, is anything that's high-pitched screamed has always been referred to as screamo, which is fucking not the case.
Right.
And I know that screamo is not really emo, so to speak. One of the albums is technically considered screamo that we're going to talk about, and it's one of my all-time favorite albums, but to me, it's still... But see, it's weird because I consider it emo, but I don't really consider it all the way emo because it's got elements that's like not. Anyway.
Interesting. I don't even know which album you're thinking about because they're
okay,
all,
well,
they're
I mean, that's weird.
Emo.
I thought, yeah, they're, right. See, but in my head, so this is how I guess justify being a fan of it.
Is oh, like, okay.
It's not really
this
emo. It's not really emo.
You in your head, like trying to rationalize listening to this. Okay, that makes
yeah,
a little bit
so,
more sense.
Yeah, so like Inside Out 2, there's a bunch of people in here going, no, it's not really emo. It's fine. But yeah, so again, the one thing that I hate even more than emo, I fucking hate the term pop punk. It is an abomination, and I cannot stand it. And that word does not belong with that other word. And I've always hated it, and I hate the fact that people call it that. I'm like, it's not. You want to call it emo, whatever. You want to call it pop rock, even better, because that's what it is. Like Blink 182 is not pop punk. I'm sorry. It's not. It's not punk.
I think
it's never going to be.
Okay, so this is where we get into the history of the genre. So I agree. I think I'm not super familiar with like the etymology of how we got pop punk because I think there's like little like examples, but they don't necessarily make the rule. So like really, really early Green Day was considered pop punk, like.
I agree with that only because, and I think the reason that the term itself came from being able to be played on the radio. That is what pop punk is. Because technically, if we're going to go that, we're going to say that, even though it's highly blasphemous.
I understand it's a controversial term for you. Unfortunately,
right.
Names mean things. So
right, exactly. So here, if we're following that same formula, that would technically mean that Bad Religion is pop punk because there is not a Bad Religion song that hasn't been played on the radio. They're on the radio forever. But you could just call them mainstream punk, I guess, but...
Sure. I think also it one of the things that I just find this about music in general, I think it's so personal and it's so individualized. It's really, really hard to even within the genre, like fans of, like, I'm sure, like, this, you see this all the time in, like, metal communities where, like, they'll say, oh, this band is this genre. And then another person will be like, fuck you, you're wrong. It's this genre. Like, it happens across genres. So I think that's just, like, a good and a bad thing because people are so impassioned about what genres are and people like categorizing things. It's kind of like a human nature thing. We want to put things in boxes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Case in point with that for the subgenres, and one of the oddest ones that I didn't even know really about until I started becoming a professional writer was at the metal publication I wrote for was atmospheric black metal. And I was like, what the fuck is atmospheric black metal? And then I listened to it and I fell in love with it. And I was like, holy shit, atmospheric black metal is amazing.
It's the shit. Yeah.
There is a album specifically that is 100% my best example of atmospheric black metal. This is way off topic, but people, if you're listening and you want to know what this is, it's from a band called Unrequited and it's called Disquiet. That's the name of the album. It is incredible. A lot of people probably won't like it because it's very out there, but that is one of those subgenres that I was like, I've never even heard of this. So I'm sure that exists in the emo scene too, where people are like, oh, it's this, it's screamo, it's whatever, you know, it's pop punk emo or whatever, you know, they keep attaching it, you know, terms and whatnot until it gets all long and complicated, but whatever.
Right.
You know, the bottom line is like, no matter how you slice it, all of these bands exist under the emo umbrella. Like they all do.
Totally.
They all do.
It's interesting though, because there's a very specific era of like late aughts, early 2010s, emo music that becomes the renaissance, so to speak, of pop punk emo music, where it is a lot of like a more upbeat, like, versus something like Brand New, because we're going to talk about Deja Entendu, which is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah,
something like Brand New, or or, you know, some of the other albums that you meant that, you know, that you put on your list. The ones that are a little bit more, per the title of the genre, emotional. Like, they're a lot slower. They're a lot angstier. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more there versus, like, you know, your all-time lows, your Panic at the Discos, your Fall Out Boys in some regards. Like, that particular era is fascinating, because I was, like, I grew up in this era, specifically a late, or like your Cobra Starships, which I don't even think you know who that is.
Never heard of them.
Have you seen Snakes on a Plane?
No, actually.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
All right, right. I have seen it, but a long time ago, and that's, I don't remember any of
it. At the very end, there's a music video for the Snakes on a Plane music, the song Snakes on a Plane. It's written by a band from called Cobra Starship. Anyway, point is like, they're this, like, early 2010s emo music, pop punk music that really jettisons into pop, or like mainstream. And they have a very particular sound that I personally find is very, very palatable in a way. And I don't even necessarily mean that in a bad way, but it's a lot more palatable in a way that, like, Brand New isn't, or The Used is.
See, that's interesting, because I think that complete opposite. I think The Used, specifically their self-titled album, which, spoiler alert, we're talking about today, and bands like Taking Back Sunday and bands like Brand New are palatable in the emo genre, and all that other stuff to me is not. Like, I, you know this, and right. And I, and, but I, also, and I,
your opinion is also rooted in heavier genres.
Very true. Very true.
You know, like, in terms of, like, grand scale, or, like, you know, the masses, right? Like, in the same way that, or like Paramore even. Like, their first album is a lot more melodic and a little bit heavier in, like, tones. There's actual, like, there is some screaming in the first Paramore album, versus The Evolution. Their, like, 2014 album called After Laughter was, like, everyone was like, what the fuck is going on? Because it was, like, lyrics, super sad. The sound, super happy.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's there's layers.
Okay. I mean, this is kind of, like, a perfect segue into just talking about, you know, obviously you're going to lead this conversation because of my opinions on it. But so, for instance, like, talking about being bands being palatable and not palatable, like, I fucking hate Fall Out Boy so much. Like, I hate their music. I hate his singing. Like, there is nothing to me about that band that I like ever. Like, I've, like, oh, the only thing I will say positive, the only thing is when Dance Dance came out, I was like, okay, that's catchy and I get it. But other than that, like, that is the only.
And I heard the only positive, like, thing you have to say about
only positive, like, I fucking,
that's crazy, man.
What makes me even madder about it is that they are named after a fucking Simpsons reference, and it makes me so much madder because I'm like, oh, why do you have this name? Anyway,
what? So okay, I'm just curious because I, again, like, I grew up listening to Fall Out Boy. I love Fall Out Boy. Like, they're very integral to a very specific, very embarrassing time in my life that I'm sure we'll get into at some point, but. I'm just curious, what about it do you not like? Do you not, you just don't like the singing, you don't like the lyrics, you don't like the what?
Everything, like the lyrics and singing and the musicianship, everything about it. So I don't even know. Okay, so I wrote it down because I was laughing in the car, by the way. So there was a song, mind you, I've never listened to this album ever. Yeah, so in my life.
Okay, spoiler alert, one of my albums. I did From Under the Cork Tree, which is Fall Out Boy's second album.
Oh, there you go, people. I don't even know that. So I'm going to go click on this real quick because I need to say the exact song.
It's a long, stupid title. There's some really, like, the title, like, the whole point is that they have stupid long titles in their names and it's kind of an in joke.
Sure. Let's go with that. So, okay, hold on. I gotta type this out.
I can think of at least three people who are just, like, so mad that I'm even engaging in conversation with you about this.
That's fine. They can be mad all they want. So I slept with someone in Fall Out Boy, right? So
yeah,
that song came on, and then like it gets heavy, and they kind of scream it, and I was like, dude, stop. This is not you guys. Like, this is not. This, you don't force that, because that's not, you know what I mean?
That's like, so interesting, because their first album is a lot more like that.
See, and then I don't know that, but even so, it's not like a pass. I laughed at it, because I was like, this is a really poor, like, example of that.
Here's the thing. I totally hear you. I don't think Pete Wentz, because here's the thing. All the screaming you hear is Pete Wentz. Pete Wentz does the backing vocals, and he does the screaming.
Okay. So who's the main guy?
The main guy is named Patrick Stump.
Okay, Patrick Stump?
Yes.
That's a great name, by the way.
he's great. I freaking love him. And I also like Pete Wentz, but like I was, you know, when I was in the scene, I was like more of a Patrick fan. Anyway, he's the main singer. He's the one whose voice you hate. Pete Wentz does all like the screaming in the earlier stuff. Okay. And he can't scream.
Yeah, it's bad. It's like...
No. It's not like I can acknowledge it. I know some people might think that I'm I can acknowledge it's not a faultless band. Like, I don't think they're perfect.
Right. No. But what I was saying, that's what I was trying to get at. You said it in a more articulate way, but I was trying to get at, I was like, the screaming itself was bad. Like, not that it was misplaced. I'm sure they probably done that before. Like I said, I haven't listened to the first album, never will, but it was just really bad. And I was like, I laughed. Fair. I was like, ah, come on, dude. Like, it sounds forced, and it wasn't even good. So
sure.
Don't do that. Sure. But anyway, so yeah, it's just, I know that I can be hypocritical in this, in the way that I treat pop music, but pop music as a whole, I just don't get. And so when I hear a band that's still a rock band, but they're just a pop band to me, I just don't like it. Like it does the opposite of relax me. So I'm just like listening. I'm on the way to work and I'm listening to this album. First, I'm upset because I'm like, man, I'm listening to this shit on Spotify. And now Spotify's gonna do some weird algorithm shit and try to put this music on some sort of playlist. Anyway,
you know, you could have gone. So at the top of the playlist, I'm just letting you and anyone else who might be listening know. If you click those three dots on Spotify, there's a little option that says exclude from taste profile. So they don't.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So they don't recommend you songs based on your playlist. So you can put all your guilty pleasures on a playlist and then exclude it. And you're not going to get, like, I don't know, Arms Wide Open as your number one song on Spotify for the year.
Damn, I had a playlist of 12 of Arms Wide Open. Oh, no. So it's just not. It's never been my jam. Like, again, you know how not palatable emo music is for me in general. So when I hear a band like this, I'm like, oh, like I can't. And just to jump really quick ahead, or if you to correlate to this, is the story so far. Same thing. I'm like, it wasn't as bad, but still I'm like, like it's too.
Okay. So the story so far album, the one that is Proper Dose. It came out in 2017. So it's actually a lot more recent. They just released an album not too long ago. Gotcha. That I put that album, it's called Proper Dose, as one of my personal favorites. I don't think it's their strongest album, but I just happen to really like that album.
Okay.
But yeah, they're very like, there's this one video of like one of their shows, and I'm just like, what is happening? Like, the crowd's absolutely nuts. It's very much like a smaller, like, this is back when they had a little bit more of like a more hardcore sound. So it was just absolute nuts. But this album was, people were just like, they sound poppy as fuck.
It's very poppy.
I like it, but yeah, yeah, I agree. But yeah, the earlier stuff is a lot more pop punk ish, like traditional.
Okay.
Yeah. I know you hate the term, but I don't know how else to describe it.
No, I hate that. I know it's there. I just hate the term. I've always hated it. And that's because, you know, it's directly related to my punk upbringing. Like, to me, punk is punk, and you cannot cross that boundary if you're not that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, hold on. So the term pop punk, with my relatively limited research, just comes more from like adolescence and anti-suburbia themes, I think, is kind of where it came from.
Yeah, which again, that makes sense.
Early Green Day. totally see that.
Oh yeah.
which also, like, the Bay Area and so the Bay Area and like San Diego, like, that's where you get emo, or like you get early pop punk bands from, apparently. Mm-hmm. You get a shit ton of them from California. But yeah, I can see that, like, just irking, because I never really got into punk in the way that I think I wanted to as a kid. Yeah, I've always appreciated it, but it's just, I never really had the opportunity to get into it as much as I would like to.
Gotcha. And so, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, just the overtly pop music to me, that mm-hmm. I feel that it just doesn't have soul. That's how I feel. That's how mm-hmm. I've always felt. And we won't get too far into this, but that's exactly how I feel like about Taylor Swift. I'm like, sure. Okay, I hear the music and I'm like, ugh. It's soulless to me. And I know she writes her own shit, so I will give her that, whatever. But a lot of pop artists don't, you know, they have like X amount of writers that just mm-hmm. throw this shit out them, and they're the voice, but they're not the creative mind behind it. And the entire, yeah. The entire pop genre, if you will, whatever, is supposed to be catchy. It's supposed to be, as we've said, palatable to everybody. You're supposed to enjoy it. But it's just not something that I've ever liked. I can't. And there is a lot of poppy stuff that I uh-huh. that I know through the years, but mostly, like, you know, the stuff in the 90s that I grew up with, I make fun of, like, God damn it. I just had their name and it just disappeared. I'll think of it. But anyway, okay. So
Spice,
like,
okay.
NSYNC. Right. Right. Okay. Well, no. Boy bands are different. Boy bands are just on a different level of crap. We're not going to know. Yeah.
But no boy band love?
No. Oh God, no.
So I will say, I think this might also, from what you have told me, what I am observing as a not completely unbiased person. Mm-hmm. So Taylor Swift and pop punk have something in common, and that is, you are not the target demographic, I fear.
100% I'm not. I've never been. And see, and it's weird though, because I grew up with a lot of radio music, but for me, I think it's just also my upbringing, like coming from, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, that a lot of the pop music then was still, you hit the nail on the head, very angsty. And it's still like, okay, so Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, that album is a pop album, right? But it's fucking incredible. It's her talking shit, like, to men. And it's, and dude, I know that album by heart, by the way, because my mom, when it came out, whoo, she had that shit on repeat, and I was a kid.
Oh my god, I'm just imagining you scream singing "You Ought to Know" in the back bar, like, and I'm here.
Yeah, I do. I still do. And like,
that's incredible.
She has a show recently, or had a show, and I was like, damn, I wish it was the Jagged Little Pill like anniversary tour. And I'm like, man, I would have liked to go to that. Anyway, so that's the kind of stuff that I grew up on. But still, it's, even though it's technically a pop album, mm-hmm. it's not like a Taylor Swift album. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot more anger behind it. So I guess maybe that's it. Like, I'm like, if there's no anger behind it, I'm probably not going to identify with it a lot.
Well, I also will say, Alanis Morissette, specifically Jagged Little Pill, it's not, I don't want to say, like, her anger is, like, a very specific kind of, like, female rage that I think is, a lot of people can, like, kind of see themselves in, versus a lot of Taylor Swift stuff, which can get pretty angry, but a lot of it, in my opinion, this is someone who is a fan of Taylor Swift, no one come for me, because she became so famous at such a young age, I feel she's emotionally stunted in some regards. I think that shows in some of her music. I'm tiptoeing this because I'm not trying to get flayed alive. But
by the Swifties listening to this podcast,
I don't know.
No, but I mean,
dude, they honestly, like, the hardcore Swifties scare the shit out of me, and I'm saying that as someone who, as you guys know, thoroughly enjoys Taylor Swift.
Right. So I sent you that meme. I saw it pop out of it. It made me laugh really hard. And it was like, Taylor Swift writes music for people who've never gotten over anything ever in their life. And it made me laugh really hard. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. Because she's been a performer for so long, since she was young, her young ideals are cemented in time. And she still has to perform those songs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, dude, you sound like a little whiny teenager still, and you're like in your 30s or whatever, and it's like, and you unfortunately have to still play those songs.
I think you hit the nail on the head. One of like Taylor Swift hit a very like she hit a lull in popularity, I would say, after like 2014 is when she released like it's her Reputation album, which turned into a whole thing. Anyway, neither here nor there. This is not a Taylor Swift podcast. She hit a little lull in popularity, and she's like obviously completely like jettisoned beyond any previous popularity recently. Mm-hmm. But the music she was writing when she was like 22 years old. Crazy. Well, it's like the We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together song. Like that song, like it's so immature. And I don't mean that necessarily in like calling her immature. I just mean like it's an immature sounding song. It is a very traditional bubblegum pop song. And also, no one come for me. I love bubblegum pop. Early 2000s bubblegum pop is my shit. So that's just my take on it. And so having to, like you said, sing that kind of music over and over and over is, I'm sure, takes a toll after a while.
Right. So, I mean, this is actually kind of a good segue too, because we're talking about you have to perform songs that you wrote when you're really young. And that is also a big issue with me with emo music, is because like the emo music that I was introduced to when I was 14 13, you know, was early Taking Back Sunday, The Used, you know, Brand New, all that stuff. But now those guys who were presumably around 19 to 20 when they were coming out, when they were big, or they were getting big, right? Most 21, I know they were all pretty fairly very young. Right?
Yeah.
Right. So they're presumably writing songs at that time about women who are maybe around 19, 18, maybe a little bit younger. We'll get into that. And now they're in their 30s and they're still talking about these things. And it's creepy. And I'm like, it's so creepy to me. And that's another big reason. I'm like, I cannot support like this genre that's like you are singing a twisted love song about somebody you were crushing on when you were 20 and they were 18 or 17. Yeah. And it's just so bizarre to me that you're still having, and I know a lot of these bands have evolved, like Taking Back Sunday, they're still releasing music and it's vastly different and all that good stuff.
Taking Back Sunday has been pretty much has avoided controversy like the plague, and I love that for them, but also they're all like married with children now, you know, so like
there you go.
Listening to Your So Last Summer and I'm just like, okay, you have a child to take care of, sir, please stop. But I just googled this. Burt McCracken, the lead singer of The Used, is 42 years old.
Whoa, that's crazy.
It's just like that, or like All Time Low, who was like one of the most popular, like truly pop punk bands of like late aughts, early 2010s, very popular. Loads of allegations, so many allegations, but also like now I can't listen to them because I'm just like, I am older than you were in this particular time frame of this album that I'm listening to, and and I'm just like, this is, as the kids would say, a little cringe.
Yeah, it's a lot of cringe. And that's what I mean. I'm like, and I know I have a soft spot for one certain band we'll talk about in a second here, but, and that I still think that I'm like, oh, this is kind of cringe, man. You're singing songs that when you were like 20.
Okay. Sorry.
Real quick though, I do want to bring up some controversy with Taking Back Sunday that you may or may not know, because you said that they avoided controversy, but
what did I miss?
So this is a story that I know of them, and this could be way wrong, but this is a story I was told in high school.
Okay.
And I don't know if this is true.
I don't know how to break it to you, but Marilyn Manson didn't have ribs removed, so he could suck
not his own that, that. Yeah, yeah, I know that. Hey, whatever. We believe what we believe, all right? In the early 2000s.
Fake news.
So tell me if this is wrong, if you've ever heard this. I mean, this could, and obviously I could probably wiki it, but I didn't. I just want to ask. So from what I understand, Taking Back Sunday and Brand New hated each other because the lead singer of Taking Back Sunday slept with Brand New guy's wife or girlfriend?
Okay, so that is true. Okay, I don't so. Like that is a true controversy.
Okay, okay. So they do have one controversy then.
Yeah. But also they were like, this was in like 2002. Like this
let's
is
call, let's back up and call it what it is. They've avoided sexual assault allegations,
which
and
we
grooming
can't,
and all that.
Which we can't say about Brand New.
Whoa, I did not know this.
The
lead singer from Brand New?
Uh-huh.
What? See, breaking news. I don't even know this. What did he do?
Okay, you didn't know that?
No, yeah, I didn't do any research on it.
Jesse Lacey was, this is after, like, he's married and has a kid at this point, but basically a bunch of, like, I want to say three different young women basically were just like, oh, no, he, like, slept with me when I was 16 years old.
Whoa. Yeah.
And what, that's why I don't.
He was how old like was 20, he at that time?
He was like 23.
Oh.
Yeah. I like these, I'm just spitballing numbers, but it was about that much. I don't want to like, you know, my word right. isn't gospel, but hold on. Let's see. Google.
Can you look that up, Jamie?
Yeah. Right. Let's see. Sexual misconduct allegations. In late 2017, Lacey was accused of sexual misconduct by two women who alleged events occurred 15 years prior while they were underage, and Lacey was in his early 20s. So I was right.
Oh, no. I did not know that. Man.
Yeah, basically, he admitted to it and claimed he had a sex addiction. And, yeah. So it was very much a this is going to ruin the tour thing.
Weird pivot, but okay, sir. Yeah, I see it. And okay, so I know this.
That's why I don't like super advertise myself as a Brand New fan. Like, it's one of my favorite. Like, Deja Entendu, still one of my favorite albums. Here's my take on it. And I don't like, I know, like, I'm not a separate the art from the artist person because I don't think that's always necessarily possible. I think if you were a fan of them before, you can be a fan of them. I think now, you know, like, it's like Bill Cosby. Like, if you hated Bill Cosby and then after all that came out, you really suddenly really loved his work, you got to look inward on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. And so, okay, so let's see. When did Deja and Tondu come out?
Like 2005?
2003.
Oh, wow.
So, okay, so the only reason why I know this album, the only reason why I know Taking Back Sunday, the only reason why I know... The Spill Canvas, which we'll talk about, is because of Monica. Monica introduced me to these bands, and I was like, that was kind of our weird, that was kind of like my guilty pleasure with her, like our weird connection. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Monica, RIP. And yeah, so I was a fan then. According to your calculations, I didn't even know about this stuff, to be honest.
Well, this came out in 2017, saying it happened 15 years prior. So 2002 is the time frame. So around the time that Deja Entendu was coming out.
Yeah, that sucks, man. I didn't know that.
Sorry. Hey, I don't know. I was seven, so.
Yeah, there you go. And I know this is like, it's obviously not every band, but I know this has been rampant with a lot of emo bands, right?
Yeah. I think Warped Tour was a blessing and a curse. Okay. Oh. Like, I, you know, as any self-respecting emo child, pop punk kid, I fucking loved going to Warped Tour as a kid, even when it was more, because it also had like a lot of like punk and ska roots, which is weird.
That was my era of Warped Tour. Yes. I know that very well. The years you're talking about, the years that I stopped going.
But you know, like I didn't get in on those years because again, I was seven.
Let's see. I'm just gonna pull up one that I distinctly remember.
Remember going to?
Yeah. And, hold on. Yep. So this was 1999, ladies and gentlemen.
Shit, I was four.
Yes. So these were the bands that played at 1999 Warped Tour.
I'm so
Seven
excited.
Seconds, Black Eyed Peas, Blink-182, The Bouncing Souls, Eminem, which I was backstage for, Grinspoon, H2O, Ice-T, Less Than Jake, Lit, The Living End, Lunatics, Molotov, Pennywise, Royal Crown, Review, Seven Deaths, Suicidal Tendencies, The Vandals, Agnostic Front, Buck-O-Nine, fucking Dropkick Murphys, El Centro. There's so many bands. I'm not going to name them all, but Jimmy World was there. Freaking Zebrahead, which was a local band that I fell in love with, which started my whole rock stuff. I'm trying to see if there's any other bands that are well known. It doesn't look like it. There's a bunch of other Finger 11. That's funny. I forgot about that band. that's a throwback. Papa Roach was there. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's probably the bigger ones. Yeah. So there was a lot of different stuff back in the day, and that's what I was. So real quick, the story. So we stuck backstage. We're backstage, and Eminem is on, and it's when he came out with the Slim Shady LP at the time, and he was huge already. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, yeah. Eminem is, everybody knows who Eminem is now, but like then was when he's like, his meteoric apparently, rise was beginning.
I mean, but, you know, Eminem isn't super relevant now, but yeah, apparently Gen Z knows very little about one.
Well,
Marshall Mathers.
Yeah. So, also real quick, his new album is amazing, by the way. So anyway, we were backstage, he's on, and he's doing his like tour, or he's doing his rounds of being, since he was so popular, he was on TRL, he was on the radio, he was on rock stations, who all made fun of him, and he really fucking hated it. So he's at Warped Tour of all places playing.
That's so, honestly, I never would have guessed Warped Tour.
Right. So somebody throws a water bottle and it hits him right in the head. We were so close to the stage, it splashed on us. And he was pissed. And he was like, fuck you guys, fuck Warped Tour, I'm out of here. And he left. And when he came backstage, I was like, hey, Eminem, huge fan. He's like, hey, what's up, little man? And then he took a picture and stuck his tongue out for my sister. And yeah, that's my Eminem story. But this is in 1999. So I met Eminem in 1999.
Yeah, after he walked off stage because people are fuckheads.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so that was the Warped Tour I grew up with. The early, you know, back when there were so many different bands and it wasn't, you know, the emo pop punk scene had not quite taken over, because it was before that. Mm-hmm. Apart from Blink-182, of course, but that was before all of, especially the emo music, essentially took over. Because I remember the years after that, me and my sister would go every year, you know, dating back to like 97, I want to say. And we would go every year. And then when that era took over, I was like, oh God, I'm not going.
That's fair. I think because also, even when I was going there, it became like less punk. There was a lot of ska. Like, I remember I've seen Less Than Jake. I've seen like Real Big Fish. Like, I've seen like a lot of like the, like, you know, heavy hitters, so to speak, of the era. Yeah. So I got some of that, but not all of it for sure.
Real Big Fish and the Mighty Mighty Bosstones were huge. And
Mighty Bosstones, yeah, them too.
They played every year at the Orange Blossom Festival, and I went every year and I saw them every year. And that was like, of ska, those are the only bands that I truly, really liked, because I grew up listening to them. But as a whole, I'm not really like that big of a fan of ska. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So
okay. I'm having a personal like ska resurgence. I've been listening to a lot of Save Ferris lately. I don't know why.
Allegations, emo scene. I know it got really, I know it's gotten weird and it's gotten weirder.
Yes.
I mean, but in every genre is like that. I mean, even in the metal scene, a lot of like really big profile bands are now getting hit with like the last.
Yeah.
I would say even.
Oh, yeah. So that was the original point that like we were talking about. So I think with Warped Tour, I think Warped Tour was a blessing and a curse in a lot of regards. I think it exposed a lot of younger people, like my age, to emo music, in which case, in some cases, it was a gateway drug to harder stuff. I know it was for me. Like, I know, like, I started listening to, like, you know, like A Day to Remember, and I was like, it can get heavier than this, I'm sure of it. And it can.
Yes, it can. It can get a lot heavier than that.
Exactly. But you know, like my idea, because like and I know this is just going to trigger you, so I'm apologizing ahead of time. My dad was in a Metallica cover band when I was a kid. So like I grew up with like some of like the classics. I listened to a lot of Rob Zombie. I listened to a lot of Metallica. Mm-hmm. But then like I was like, okay, but then like I got more into like hardcore music versus like metal. Like that's kind of where I found my own path. All of that is to say, Warped Tour was good and it was bad. I also think it was a breeding ground of barely adult men making poor choices.
Oh yeah. I mean,
because there was a lot of drinking and there was a lot of infighting. There was a lot of drama.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
but it was also like a lot of young men, not very many women. Like Hayley Williams was like one of the first ones, and it was just like, it sucked. and also being exposed to like teenagers who idolize them.
Yeah,
and feeling like
groupies,
exactly. Yeah. And that's in no way like saying like, you know, it's their fault, but it was like, it was a position for younger women to be taken advantage of, for children to be taken advantage of.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think that is why a lot more of it is coming out, because people, as they get older, especially in like 2017 to like 2020, people realizing like, I shouldn't have been a 15-year-old smoking weed in a tour bus with a band. You know?
Yeah, creepy.
Yeah, totally. Creepy. Super creepy.
Yeah, very creepy. So speaking of brand new, I did get to revisit Dejan Tondu, which I haven't listened to in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, for me, the album itself is kind of like it's where I draw the line of like where it can get poppy and where I don't want it to be poppy, because there are songs on that album that are very poppy, but then there's like heavier, you know what I mean? Like the more screamo-ish stuff. So I have more of a love-hate relationship for that album, but I think it's more so a nostalgia thing too, because like I said, Monica introduced me to it when we were she was a freshman and I was like a sophomore in high school. It's
crazy that you can say that about Brand New, but you can listen to like The Taste of Ink and be like, this is good, cool and good.
No, that song I do not like. I do not like that song. I do not like it. I do not like it at all. One bit.
That's like one of their most popular songs.
It is. And I will not eat green eggs and ham. Sam, I am. Okay, so I feel like I was rhyming there for a moment. But
a little bit.
No, that is the only song I skip on that album.
Really?
Only song. Yep.
That's hysterical. Yeah.
So anyway, that was the first. We're just going to let's just leap right into it. We're going to go.
We've been talking for 45 minutes.
Exactly. So I will tell you the deeper, more fucked up reasons why the Used self-titled album is one of my favorites. But I will also explain to you just at the surface level why I love the album. So as we were talking, and as you've discovered, me not being the demographic for emo music, to me, the reason why I latched onto that album, just from a surface level, it's heavy-ish. And I don't mean like tonality all the way through, but
like content?
Yes. I will say, for me and being a previous lead singer for many, many bands, and I love Burt McCracken's nasty scream voice, because to me at that time, and I will tell you why in a second, it was how I felt inside.
Oh, yeah.
That voice, it was a perfect encapsulation of my life at 14 when that album came out. And I love it. It's because it's violent, and it's sad, and it's violent, and it's passionate. And so his screams are just like, to me, there's no other band apart from what's his name and Taking Back Sunday that can scream that well and make it sound still good. Like not, you know, overtly like, ugh, like you, it's like, what are you doing? So I will get into some more fucked up reasons real quick why I love this album. So at 14 years old, when this album, let me fact check when this actually came out.
I'm scared.
Yeah, you should be. 2002. Okay, so I was a junior. I was 15.
Okay.
So at 14 years old, I was I had a drug addict mom. Mm-hmm. I had an abusive father. I was living in hell, and the Used self-titled album came out, and it blew my life open, because I was like, holy fuck. I know a lot of the lyrics are about them escaping Utah and stuff. Let me fact check that. They're from Utah, correct?
Hold on. Jamie, can you pull that up, please?
Can you pull that up? Let me see. Yes, Utah. I know The Taste of Ink is basically an anthem of that, but also the only reason why I did appreciate it, because I got it because I wanted to get out of Riverside for multiple reasons.
Sure.
So at that time, 14 years old, drug addict mom, abusive father, 13 years old, I reached the pinnacle of my suicidal ideation, where I wrote a suicide note and almost killed myself. Didn't happen, obviously, I'm here. But that album comes out, and it made me feel like I wasn't alone for the first time in my life. to be honest. And I listened to a lot of music then, but like Korn, you know, but that was a whole different other kind of thing going on with Jonathan Davis and his problems. But I felt that this album and what Bert was singing about, and just, you know, obviously the band was writing about, was I felt connected to it. Mm-hmm. And like on my own, fuck, man.
Yeah.
If there totally. Was going to be, if there was going to be an anthem for me in my life at that time, that was my anthem. And so again, the way he screams on my own in that song, I'm like, oh, like I feel it, like I'm there, you know. And it's still to this day, I love it because it fits nicely in the box of it's not all the way, it's not poppy. I wouldn't consider that album apart from Taste of Ink and what's the other one? I'm drawing a blank right now. There's like two songs that are really poppy on that, but the other ones I feel are like heavier and kind of nastier, and that's why I like it.
Is it maybe Memories?
Yes, there you go. Thank you. So those two songs, like,
those are the only two poppy songs on the whole damn thing, which is
right. So, but I listen to this album still to this day all the time, not just because of the fucked up emotional reasons why I attach to it, but also because I just think it's an incredibly good album. And I think mm-hmm. it's like, it was very unique for its time because it wasn't like everything else that it was coming out at that time. Like, I feel that you now they're like, I'm like, okay, you guys went way back into the pop arena. They went,
like, it's interesting. A lot of like, sorry, I'm cutting you off. A lot of like pop punk or even like hardcore bands have gone in a weird electronic direction, which very bizarre to me. Like, I know Bring Me the Horizon.
Well, they're not even recognizable anymore.
No.
I remember when my buddy showed me them. This was like, I was 21-ish, 2019, 20?
Yeah, because they got really popular in like 2007, like when like, yeah.
So it was before that, and it was like hardcore. And I was like, oh shit, it's kind of heavy. It's pretty good. And then now I'm like, why do they sound like Linkin Park? Anyway.
Not to disparage Linkin Park? Are we
No. But they're trying to sound like them, and they're not them. Anyway.
Yeah. No, some of their like more recent stuff, they like someone went crazy on a fucking synth, and I was just like, wow, what's happening here?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. A lot of bands have done that, and they're continuing to do that, which is
I don't know why
super weird. But so again, so the album had come out, and this is actually one of my all-time favorite shows. So back in the day, Utes, especially in Southern California, there's a legendary rock station called K-Rock, and K-Rock used to do this thing for bands.
Is K-Rock not around anymore?
It's still around, but it's just not K-Rock anymore to me. K-Rock is like, they play weird shit on there that I don't listen to anymore. And it's like, my K-Rock days were Green Day, The Offspring, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. To me, good stuff. I know people it's subjective, but whatever. Anyway.
I understand.
So, right. They used to throw free shows, and they used to do it all the time at the Best Buy in Westminster. Every single time. The Used was one of those bands. I got to see them for free play basically that first album all the way through. That's and awesome. It was incredible. It was an amazing show. And since we just talked about Linkin Park, they also did that for Linkin Park. I got to see Hybrid Theory pretty much performed in its entirety for free. And I had Mike Shinoda and Chester Bennington sign my skateboard. I snapped said skateboard 2 weeks later and I threw it in the trash. I didn't know they were going to be that big. I was like fucking 14. I don't know.
God.
This happened.
Oh my God. I hate being young and dumb and having no brain cells and just thinking like, oh, who cares? Like,
yeah, I know, really though. And they were like, I was skating around in the parking lot waiting for them to come on. And then they stopped me like, hey man, they were just standing at the gate. They weren't even like, this was obviously way before Hybrid Theory really took off. So they weren't even aware of their stardom then, even though they were still big. They were still, to them, a local band. Well, local to, you know, whatever, wherever they came from, so to speak, not Westminster. But
right.
So they were like, hey, do you want us to sign your board? And this is what I said. I'm fucking skating around. I think I was 13. When did Hybrid Theory come out? Hold on. Can you look that up, Jamie?
Yeah.
Let's see. Oops. That's not what I meant to do. There we go. So Hybrid Theory came out, yeah, in the year 2000. So I was 13 years old. So they were like, hey, you want us to sign your board? I was like, oh, you're the guys from Linkin Park. That's what I said. And I hand them my skateboard over the fence. They sign it. Mike Shinoda, Chester Bennington, hand it back to me. And I'm like, cool, thanks. And I skated away. And then I was skating my little life away because that's all I cared about when I was 13 years old. I snapped that deck and I threw it away. And then years later, I'm like, man, I had one of the earliest autographs of Mike Shinoda and Chester Bennington, and they're gone in some landfill somewhere.
Wow.
I know. It's pretty crazy.
Hindsight's 2020, man. That's fucking nuts.
I know. I met Eminem in 1999. I met Linkin Park in 2000.
You really got in on the ground floor on a lot of these fuckers.
That's all I did when I was younger, is I went to shows. And I'm telling you, this is my life. This is what I did for, at this point, it feels like an eternity. But so the Used played the show. It was incredible. And fast forward to 2017, 18? What would be, when did we say the Used came out? Sorry, got to look this up again. When came out? 2002. So they did
You said 2017. I was like, what are you talking about?
No. So they did the 15-year anniversary of it, I believe. And it was 2017. So I'm right on that. So they did a tour where they did that album in its entirety. I got tickets. And I went and saw it by myself because my sister couldn't make it. And I didn't know anybody else that wanted to go because everybody else always made fun of me for liking that album. But anyway.
I would have gone with you, James.
We didn't know each other at the time, but that would have been cool.
I know.
So it was at the Observatory. I ended up, it sold out. I got tickets like right when they went on sale. It sold out. And people, of course, were selling tickets for an ungodly amount of money. Mm-hmm. So shame on you people for doing so. I do not believe in ticket scalpers.
You heard it here first.
I agree. And so I posted on, I don't remember what their Facebook post about it or Instagram. I think it was only Facebook. I don't think Instagram was around then or popular. Anyway.
In 2017?
I don't know, dude. My timeline for social media is so far off.
Yeah, Instagram was a thing in like 2011.
Okay, so whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about. So anyway, this girl commented and she messaged me. She was like, hey, you have an extra ticket. And I was like, yeah. She's like, how much do you want for it? I was like, face value. She's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. She's like, you're like not scamming? I'm like, no. I'll meet you at the show. I'm going. I can give you the ticket. You give me the money. We're good. And it was like $35 maybe. And people were selling them online for like $200. It was absurd. But anyway, so
that's what happened when I was selling my When We Were Young ticket. Because I was just sold it at face value. Like I wasn't trying to make money. I just didn't want to go anymore. Like, I don't know. It sounded miserable now. Like I was like, I got the ticket, but now I don't want to go. And that's exactly what happened. The lady that I sold it to was just like, that's all you're selling it for? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not trying to like rip anyone off. Just like pay the fees that I paid and I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. One of my buddies, my good buddies, every year him and his wife would buy Coachella tickets, and then they would sell them for like a ridiculous amount of money. They'd buy them at like whatever they were, $300. They would sell them for $1,000. And and people are buying or paying this without even knowing the lineup, which is bizarre as fuck to me. Anyway, so went to the Used show, saw them perform that album again. First time I've seen them perform, and I've seen the Used quite a few times. Unintentionally, a lot of times. Back in the day, on purpose, the last year, But anyway, saw that album and performed it in its entirety. I got very emotional for obvious reasons, but it was an incredible night. The only bummer is Bert no longer screams. It's the guitarist that does it, and that's kind of a bummer because I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my shit if I hear him scream. But he does it.
Yeah. The last year of Warped Tour, they did like a last final hurrah Warped Tour, and the Used was there. And I went, and like I wasn't even that enmeshed with the genre anymore. Mm-hmm. It was a lot more of like I don't even know what the proper term for it is, but basically 2000 and like 10 like new pop punk bands from like 2010 onwards, like that era. So they had some. Like I know Simple Plan was there that year. The Used was there. But basically I was only there for a couple bands, but they had a lot of newer bands that I hadn't actually listened to yet. Besides the point. Everyone was very rowdy for a Used concert or for Used set. And he wasn't screaming then either. This was in like 2016, 2017, whenever the last Warped was.
Yeah, I would imagine that after years of him doing so, he's like, I don't want to kill my vocal cords anymore. So, and that's fair.
I was gonna say, I don't think there was an abundance of like vocal training that there is now.
I don't think so, in
2002.
right.
Yeah, like there's a lot of even like hardcore bands where they're like their voice just doesn't sound the same anymore.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're just improper singing for years and years, and now they just can't even do it anymore.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, that was the only bummer, but still, it was a very special night for me. I got to see the album again and see songs that I'm sure they haven't performed in decades or whatever, 15 years, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So it was great. I love that album. It speaks to me in a way that no other emo album does. I would say the secondary album that we have on the list that kind of does the same thing, but not all the way through, is Take It Back Sunday.
No.
I mean in the heavier side of things. We'll get to Smoke Havoc next. But I mean, just talking about like the heaviness and the screaming, like, and kind of more in line with the Used, is Taking Back Sunday.
On that album.
Yes, on that album, because they don't do that. They didn't do that.
They quickly pivoted.
They did, which was kind of a bummer and probably why I stopped listening to them. But Where You Want to Be, I feel, was like that could that like like that that.
I will say, so you're gonna also laugh at me. They opened for My Chemical Romance when I went to go see them.
That tracks.
which was super cool, but yeah, and he still actually does sing live very, very well. So I can at least let you know that.
Gotcha. So real quick, breaking news, if you will. It's not really breaking news, it came out a while ago, but since we're talking about them, funny enough, the Used and Taking Back Sunday have announced a tour.
They have.
Yes, they have.
I didn't know that.
Yes, they announced. I saw it today and I was going to send it to you, but I totally forgot to. But they're only going to be in Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, Reno, and then they're going to Fresno and then Anchorage, but they're not going anywhere else.
Anchorage? Fresno? Yeah. Who booked this tour?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they'll announce more dates, because that's some stupid shit. If they're not coming anywhere near SoCal, that's dumb.
But, you know, they're playing together, so that's the point. It's like, it was just funny timing. I was like, hey, we're going to talk about these two bands. Oh, they're
that's
playing together.
Really funny.
But yeah, there's no other instance where I would ever see either of them again. Like, I wouldn't. I saw them back in the day. I saw them in their heyday, if you will, during the times when their albums that I actually really liked came out. Where You Want to Be, yeah, that was another one. Even though, yes, there is a lot of poppier leaning songs on the album, I feel it's a nice hodgepodge of also like heavier rock styles with the screaming, which I appreciate. So
there's also a touch of it. We covered this on Hops and Notes. We covered Louder Now.
Oh yes. I do like that album.
Mm-hmm. So we covered that one, and that was really fun to revisit, because I think Louder Now, which I thought was an earlier album, but it's like their third album.
I want to say it was 2005, because I remember listening to it sometime around high school. Oh, 2006. So that tracks, yeah, 2006. That's what it is.
I think so.
Okay.
Hold on, I could be wrong.
So no, you're right. 2006.
Am I? Yep. Wow, I'm good.
You're good. yeah, but. And I remember that album vividly too, because again, at the time, I did like them, and then Louder Now came out, and I was like, oh, okay, this is still, it was, I was bummed because it was less screaming, but it was still a very solid album. It's still very, like, tonality, and I just think they're really good musicians, and I think they have a nice balance of two singers. Again, I don't know people's names by heart in this genre, but whatever. But I like that they went back and forth between, like, the screaming and then, like, the cleaner vocals. I always appreciate when bands do that very well. Not every band does that well, but when they nail it, it's like
just chef's kiss. Yeah. Oh man. So listen, you see kids. When James asked me to be on this podcast, I had a really hard time narrowing down my three album choices, because there's a lot of, I even changed one, which is funny. So one of the albums was through the screen door or through the window. It's a something corporate album.
Well, I'm glad you didn't put that out, or them at all.
Well, so here's the funny thing, is I was talking about this because this was one of, like, this was not even like this was like simpy baby Alex. Like, this is an album that I loved when I was like, I'll never be loved. but I listened, when I listened to this album as like a very young teenager, I had to have been like 13. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, this album is so good. And I re-listened to it after I put it on this list, because I was like, oh my God, this is one of my favorite albums from when I was a kid. I re-listened to it and I was like, what am I listening to? Like, all the magic had just gone as prefrontal cortex developed and my opinions on music shifted. Like, I was just like, wow. Like, there's a couple songs off that album that, like, I do like because they're cute. But, like, right. I'm so glad I didn't. I also refrained from putting on a My Chemical Romance album. Because, like, you know.
I'm surprised you didn't do that because, to be honest, I don't hate them nearly as much as I hate a lot of other bands. Pause for a really loud caller. Not pause. Vroom. Vroom.
Yeah, if I was going, because also it's a controversial take depending on what My Chemical Romance album you pick as like one of the best. Oh,
like the end all be all, if you will. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot, like, Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge is a lot of people's favorite, but then also people think Black Parade is like the best, which Black Parade is so much poppier than Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge. And yeah, so I think it just depends on your personal tastes, and I'm not opening that can of worms the same way I'm not opening the Taylor Swift can of worms, because My Chemical Romance fans are also terrifying.
Yeah, they are. I will say I'm Not Okay was like a high school jam for me. And I will forever love that song, like most people do. But I remember being drunk at school and singing that.
The way you feel about the self-titled used album and like how it got you at a good age, like not like there's also a couple like Law Dispute songs that I'm like, I shouldn't have been listening to this on a bus in middle school, like screaming, will I still get into heaven if I kill myself? Like, what are we talking about here? Law Dispute is a classic, but also like there's a lot of, like, I'm just like, how did I get my hands on this music? I lost my train of thought, but
we're just talking about how My Chemical Romance and that, and you were gonna put an album, but
gonna put a Something Corporate album, and then
so real quick on that,
my mind. How much do you hate Something Corporate?
There are three bands in the genre, if you will, besides Fall Out Boy, that I hate so much. Something Corporate is one of them. Simple Plan is another. And I lost my train of thought already on the third one. Oh, Dashboard Confessionals. Fuck no. I hate that band. Fuck that guy. Whatever.
Ugh. That's so funny.
So mad.
So, do you tangentially also hate Jack's Mannequin because it's the same guy? Like, is it the voice?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a lot to do with the voice,
but
I also think it's a lot to do with the music in general. So going back to how I say, like, and I know this is gonna be hypocritical based on the next album we're gonna talk about real quick, but I feel that all of their music is fucking whiny. There's no way to me, there's not one song where he's not whining, where they're not whining, whatever.
And Something Corporate?
That's to me. No, Dashboard Confessionals.
Oh.
Dashboard Confessionals. That's what I'm talking about. That band, to me, is just whine from the beginning to the end. And I have unintentionally seen them live as well, because they used to be part of all the older K-Rock shows when they came out and they were popular. And I was like, oh my God, I am walking away from this.
I'm going to be honest. I think I only know like three Dashboard songs.
Oh, that's surprising. They're a pretty big one, at least from what I know.
I know, I know the classics. I know Hands Down, I know Vindicated, and I know Screaming Infidelities. I think that's about it. Sorry.
That's all we got to say about Dashboard Confessionals, people.
If you like I have no real opinion. They never that's really fine. Caught my attention. So while we are talking about it, before we move on to the albums, I know we've been yapping away.
We're just we're bouncing around. That's what we're doing here.
this is not my proudest moment. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I was what the kids might call now chronically online.
Okay.
And there's a very specific genre, let's say, called bandom. Like bandom, like bands and fandom, merge it together, you get bandom.
Never and
I know this is embarrassing for me.
All right.
So basically, I just want you to picture like the same way that like boy bands have like fangirls. Like I need you to imagine a community of young teenagers who were basically obsessed with like a very with pop punk music, with like emo music. Okay. So like My Chemical Romance, Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy, anything under the Fueled by Ramen label was basically like it.
Okay.
But
I didn't know that was a label.
Oh yeah. So Fueled by Ramen is a music label that was started by, I believe it was also in conjunction with Decay Dance, which was the Fall Out Boy label that they made.
Okay.
Fueled by Ramen, it's still around. I don't know anything about it now, but in like 2010, it was super popular, and it was Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy, Paramore, Cobra Starship, The Academy Is, like all these like emo pop punk bands. All Time Low was also included, not in the label, but I just mean like in the general bandom vibe. This was also like the peak of like internet toxicity in my life, because I was on like a couple like forums. Used to be kids back in the day.
Back in the day, before there was Instagram and Facebook, we used to have forums.
Well, yeah, we had forums. I was on like a couple like bandom forums, and it was just like the most insane shit. And also, when you're 13 years old, you're a psychopath. Oh, so like, yeah. I was getting into fights with people over the most asinine shit. I look back at this time fondly, but I'm like, I am so glad I wasn't allowed amongst the general population. But yeah, bandom is a very specific era of like pop punk that I think that I wanted to shed some light on as my as the pop punk expert. Okay. It also, thankfully not me, included like very peculiar teenage girls who would ship band members, so write fan fiction about them.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a legion of people who to this day think that the bassist of My Chemical Romance, Mikey Way, and the bassist of Fall Out Boy, Pete Wentz, were a item. Were, like, totally making out. Totally a thing. Totally together.
So, this is weird that you bring this up, because there's a rumor that I've known for a very long time that kind of lines up with this these years that I know is probably not true at all, and who gives a fuck if it is true, but whatever. Sure. The one that I know is that Davey Havoc of AFI and Nick 13 of Tiger Army were a big item back in the day. So
this is the other
I don't
side.
Know I don't know I don't know, but it sounds familiar, because I remember somebody told me this. It might have been my sister. And I was like, do you really believe that? And she was like, well, it's got to be true. And I'm like, why? Because you read it online from somebody who heard it from somebody? Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Oh, yeah.
But still, I didn't give a shit then, and I don't give a shit now if it's true or not, because both of those albums are, are amazing, so whatever.
Right. Also, like, you know, no tea, no shade, but, like, I've seen a group of young men, like, I've never seen a group act more gay than the bros.
Yeah, this is true.
I can imagine being famous and having hordes of teenage girls dissecting your every move, and then be like, well, clearly, like, they would think you and Phil are just madly in love.
No, I'm sure they would see the way, if they saw any kind of comment or anything that of us interacting online, especially Phil, they'd be like, oh, Phil's in love with him. Yeah, it's fine.
Now Keith.
Now Keith. Yeah, so no, that's strange though, because like I heard this around that time. So it's really funny that you said that. And it just sparked that memory. I'm like, huh, I wonder if that rumor was part of fandom, because I heard that and I was like,
I'm okay. Sure it was. I wasn't super into AFI at that point. Like, that was a little bit later, before I was like, oh, I love this band. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that band. Interesting. I'll forever love that band. And
totally. No, I love AFI.
I will not tolerate any AFI bashing. Fuck all of you who say anything negative about them. They are incredible. And they've always been incredible. I've grew up listening to them. They've evolved, and I like, except for Crash Love, everything they've put out.
You heard it here first.
Crash Love is a terrible fucking album, and I hate that they released that. Anyway.
So far, we've talked about every album except for The Spill Canvas, if you want to talk about that.
Well, technically two, because I do have one. I have my honorable mention / one that I changed. But we'll just briefly talk about it, because you know what? I will bring it up, and I will tell my story of why it's always funny to me when I think about them. So that band is Jimmy Eat World. That album is Bleed American. I also love that album. I grew up with that album. I saw Jimmy Eat World back in the day a lot of times that album came out. So in my high school days, I was Mr. Punk Rock. I had a big ass fucking mohawk. I had my patched up vest. Everybody knew me. Everybody knew me as the quote unquote gutter punk, if you will. I wasn't a gutter punk. I took showers, but I've been called that multiple times. Anyway, so what was funny about it was all of the punks and all of the metalheads, who are a lot of my friends still, hung out with each other at lunch. You know, we were labeled the freaks. There was a guy who was a big time metalhead back in my early days of high school. I wasn't really that big into extreme metal. I didn't get it. I didn't like it. I was punk all the way through. And it was a slow burn for me to like get into like death metal, like Cannibal Corpse and Nihil and all that good stuff.
Sure.
So, but there was a guy that hung out with us, big time metalhead. And I would have my punk vest on, you know, my patch up vest and all that. And I would be wearing my Jimmy Eat World shirt. And every time I wore it, he's like, dude, you got to get rid of that fucking shirt. And I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep wearing this shit. And you know what? I'm going to wear it even more because it pisses you off. But I love Bleed American. I love that album. I don't like all the songs on that album, but majority of the songs I do love on that album. I still think it's good. I listened to it today, in fact, because I was like, let me brush up because I haven't listened to this in a while. It's a great album. You know?
Yeah. Bleed American is actually one of the albums that I saw mentioned. Remember when I mentioned at the top of the episode that I was like, I looked into like 90s pop punk and a bunch of bands I had never heard of. One of the few that I had was Bleed American, that album.
Oh, wow.
Because it came out in like 2001.
Yeah, it came out. Yeah. Long time ago. And so I knew them before that too. Right. So that makes sense then. Okay, so I guess I do know 90s emo because I was listening to Jimmy Eat World like back in the day.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's the vibe. I didn't really listen to many of them because they didn't even sound familiar. So, but also like I remember I was looking up like top 10 best emo albums, and like a lot of them were like from the 90s and I had never heard of them. So
okay. Let me see.
I might have some homework to do.
There you go. Clarity came out in 1999. Static Prevails 1996. Yeah. So I already knew Jimmy Eat World, but we knew Jimmy Eat World. We saw them back in the day, and I was already a fan. And then Bleed American comes out, and I'm like, holy fuck, what an album!
I love Bleed American. Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to it today. Hear You Me is the song that I listen to when there's loss, and I will put that shit on repeat, and it's sad and makes me happy and makes me sadder, which makes me relieved, if you will.
So. I could see that being a cathartic song. So
it is
within Bandom. It was like one of my first times ever experiencing like my grandma died when I was like really young and we were super close, but like losing like a friend, like someone in my age group, I made this internet friend through Bandom, and I had to have been like 14. She was like 18. Like, she wasn't much older than me, but she had cancer. And I like one day, like she would, her activity would be in and out every now and again. And like, she was just like going through treatment and stuff. But we found out at one point, like, she had passed away. And yeah, it was like, I was like distraught. I was so confused.
No, yeah, I'm sure. Especially at that age when everything doesn't make sense already.
Well, also when you're like 14, you're not thinking about dying like that, you know? Well, I mean, you are, but like in like the angsty internalized way, not like.
Right. Not that it's a reality of life. That is gonna right. happen.
Like you're like, old people die.
Right, right. And you're like, I want to die. Ah,
exactly.
I'm so misunderstood.
No one gets me.
It's not a phase.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it was.
It was.
But that song was used in like this like tribute video me and all my bandom friends made. It was like so cute and so sad. So that's what that reminds me of too. So
yeah, it's a great song, and it's a very, I feel like it, like you said, it's a cathartic song, and it's like it just kind of it gets you. But yeah, so Bleed American, my third / honorable mention album. I think it's a great album. I still listen to it to this day, not all the way through, because like you said, when you're younger, your tastes are certainly more in line with this type of stuff when you're angsty and misunderstood and young. And I was 13, 14 when the album came out. And now being older than that, I don't appreciate the album as much as I used to.
I mean, yeah, the Something Corporate one was rough for me. I was just like, oh my God, I fucked with this album so heavily. And I listening to it again, I was just like, who was I? Is anything
right,
real?
Right,
was anything
right.
real? Did I like, but really,
was it I was, really was, in love? Was I?
No, I was 13. Oh my God. Side note. There's this meme going around, or like this like meme format for like TikToks, where it's just like someone who's just like me, age 5, and just like, did we do it? Did we marry him? And like that's the sound, and the and then it like cuts to like that person, like their actual age, and it's just like, Gerard Way? No, we didn't.
No, that was never a possibility.
Right. Or like, just like, you know, teenage, like people who like, you know, who were teenagers during the height of like My Chemical Romance. And it was just like, why did I think putting on like they would show a photo of like a fit from a concert that they went to in like 2005 or whatever. And be like, why did I like go to a concert thinking like Gerard Way was going to see me across the way and fall in love with that?
My sister used to, well, she might still be like this, but she used to be the girl in the crowd. Like, he pointed at me. I'm like, no, he didn't. He wasn't pointing at you. He pointed in the direction of the crowd, and you happen to be in that direction. But here we go. Final album that we will discuss. An album that I know we both hold very near and dear to our hearts.
Yes.
That we both celebrated together. It's 20th anniversary, right? Was it the 20th?
I know. Anyway. I think it was just like a tour.
Their 20th. It wasn't that album. It was just
the
their
band's. 20th. Yeah.
Yes. But so it kind of was because that was their first album. So anyway, The Spill Canvas, Sunsets and Car Crashes. Man. This is as emo as it gets for me. Like, this is so emo.
It's emo. Like, it's whiny and emo and angsty and just.
Yeah, it's very, very emo. And it's so bizarre to me that I still like it. It's still bizarre to me that I still like them. And
I'm surprised.
Right. And I'm still surprised. And it's weird because, like I said, going back to talking about Monica, she's the one that showed me this album. Or no. My sister showed me this album, and then I told Monica I liked it, and she was like, what? You like emo music? And I was like, oh, no, I'm shocked too. But not emo music. I was like, I like this album, right. But it's a great album. Man, The Tide is one of my all-time favorite songs ever.
I am so mad about this.
Why?
To this day, my ex won, like their like fucking talent show. They won like $300 in high school singing The Tide.
Really?
Yes.
Oh man.
So
did
like,
you, like, not like it? Because
a little. Like, I still love the song, but like every time I listen to the song, like I'm forced to remember this because I've seen the performance, and I'm just like,
oh man. And then, I love that song, and I feel like a lot of the lyrics also kind of identify with it because it reminds me of myself. And my sisters a lot, because we went through similar things. But and then when they released the Tide 2.0, and I was like, oh my god, there's a new version. And normally I do not like when bands do this, when they try to dress up a song they released some years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's really good.
I think that's really the version that they played when we saw them too.
Yeah, it is. And they played that version with Monica when it was me and her that we went and saw them. She had surprised me with tickets, and she was like, hey, guess what? I was like, what? She's like, we're going to go see the Spellcounters. I was like, fuck yeah, let's go.
I remember I remember that because that's when we around the time that we first met, and you were like, the only emo band I like. Because at this point, I was, you know, I was me being my combative ass self, and I was just like, emo this, emo that, punk rock this, punk rock that. And you were like, shut up. And then you were like, seeing the Spellcounters. And then I was just like, okay, emo. Like, you know.
Yeah, I remember. I remember you made fun of me for it. And I was like, I'm not emo. And you're like, you like emo. Ah. But no, yeah, this album, it's a great album. I mean, it's very emo, man. All the lyrics is like
All Hail the Heartbreaker is so good.
It is a good song. And yeah, man, the Tide. Oh god, hold on. I gotta look this up real quick. Let me see.
No, the Tide's great. All Hail the Heartbreaker, Sunsets and Car Crashes.
3685 is one of my favorites on there.
3685, yeah. Bracelets, like
Your Evil Soul. Yeah, that's, come on. Like, to me, this is a quintessential emo album, and it's funny every time I bring this band up, and people are like, "You like them?" And I'm like, "I do." It's so weird, and I don't know. I'll never be able to explain it because all the qualities that I spent the past hour and 20 minutes talking about that I don't like is this album. So I can't explain it. I'm never going to be able to explain it, but I just think it's a really good album. And I just like the band, and I like pretty much everything they've released up to this point. They just released a new song and I thought it was pretty good. So, you know, No Really I'm Fine, you know, One Fell Swoop, you know,
You know, do you listen to any of their recent stuff?
I have a little bit, not all the way through. But I mean, it's obviously it doesn't like catch me as.
Oh, no. I will say, I was like, it's a newer song because, so for those of you who don't know, Spellcanvas has gone in and out of activity over since like they, so every now and then they'll release like an album or like a song. Now I'm just looking at freaking the Spellcanvas songs, but, yeah, No Really I'm Fine is incredible, and so is One Fell Swoop. But they did a EP, I want to say, in 2021. Oh, it's a full album. Sorry. Conduit, which came out in 2021. And one of the singles is called Firestorm. And when they dropped that, I didn't listen to Conduit. I didn't listen to the album. But Firestorm, I listened to on repeat. I don't know why. It's super poppy. But it's like it's like that rock pop that like just scratches my brain in just the right way. I love it.
So I just pulled up their Spotify page because I wanted to look at the album cover. Apparently they have a lullaby version of One Fell Swoop called One Fell Snooze.
So there is this like person. No. So there's this person that that does, hold on, I have to find it. That does
lullaby covers.
Yeah, Sparrow Sleeps. So it is this person who makes lullaby covers of emo music and just like general just popular music. Mm-hmm. So if you ever need some like really great sleep music, Sparrow Sleeps is awesome.
There you go. Look up Sparrow Sleeps, I guess.
They just did Weezer songs.
Oh, okay.
hold on. There's Is a Real Baby, which is lullaby covers of Say Anything songs.
Okay.
Fucking, oh yeah, this is great. There's Bowling for Soup, Bowling for Sleep.
That's funny. That's clever.
Anyway, they're great. I don't know why I like it so much, but it's very funny.
That's funny.
But yeah, Spellcanvas, love them to death. I really liked, being able to see them, and I it's cool that we were able to do that. And I think that was also just like a nice tribute.
It was going back to Monica. Yeah, it was. It was very I was very emotional for obvious reasons.
Right.
You know, she passed away in February, and lo and behold, then they announced the 20-year anniversary, and I'm like, for fuck's sake. And we totally would have gone. She would have gone with us. It would have been an amazing night. But yeah, Spill Canvas, man. Like, that's totally. So when COVID happened, we would share when Nick, the lead singer, he would get on Instagram Live and play acoustic shows for free. And we would get on, and I would send her the link, and she'd send me the link, reminding me that he was on. And then we would comment and recommend songs. And so she would, like, jump on and tip him on Venmo. And then every time it happened, she was like, oh, hell, the Heartbreaker, like, every single fucking time. And he would play it, and it was amazing. Like, he would just literally just sit there and put his Venmo code or whatever and then play. And he would play for a good 30 minutes to an hour acoustic version. That's awesome. Of all the songs. And it was great. It was like, it was an odd relief for me in a time that was very chaotic for everybody.
Totally. You know,
across the board. Everything was shut down. I was at home. I was depressed. Everyone was going crazy. One of my other good friends had died at the time. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm just a mess. And then I'm like, oh my God, Spill Canvas songs. Let's go.
That's awesome.
Another great memory.
Yeah. I like, cause like I wasn't super involved with like the, like, you know, in Bandom, like I was talking about where you like really were fixated on like every personal tidbit. It was very like parasocial, I will say, in Bandom, like wanting to know everything you could and want to feel like you're like friends with these band members, which you weren't. Like obviously the power dynamics were super crazy weird, but I didn't fixate on the Spill Canvas that way, thankfully. So I didn't really know a lot about like Nick. And so it was really cool hearing him talk so openly about like his experience with like mental health and or like his mental illness struggles, which is really cool because we have a lot of very similar mental illness issues or similar mental health problems. So that was really cool to hear him talk about that. And because like we have very similar stances on it too, about like
taking care of it. He talked about that a lot in the Instagram Live videos too. Like he just got really like, and I didn't know all that stuff either until then. That was 2020. And I was like, whoa. And then that made me appreciate him and the music a lot more.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, even though it's really emo, it's also probably not a lot about just emo subject matter. More so like, hey, man, I got some really fucking deep mental health issues that I've been dealing with for a long time. And this is like my journey of identifying and trying to deal with all that. So it made a lot more sense lyrically wise. After I learned all that, and then him talking about it, and then, you know, telling people like, hey man, you're not alone.
There's like a couple songs, because like he mentioned it in the show that we went to, but about him having bipolar disorder with like schizophrenic tendencies.
Yeah, schizophrenic,
And there's like a couple songs where like I'm just like, oh, he's clearly like going through a schizophrenic breakdown.
Oh,
like
this
is like I think it was Appreciation and the Bomb, I think, where I was just like, oh, it's all coming together. And like it makes like it adds like, I think for me, gives me an extra appreciation for it, because it's just like I get that feeling.
Definitely. And no, I share the similar stance now that I myself am taking care of or trying to take care of my mental health as well. And I will say here and now, you are not alone. Please go get help. Please go talk to somebody. You know, you may think that you're not crazy, but you know, mental health is there for people who are just struggling, man. Like,
totally,
we all go through shit. So,
and I'll say the same thing I say on Horrible People or I say on Hops and Notes. Mental health is not your fault, but it is your responsibility.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm the tough love part of this segment. He was just like, "You're not alone. Get help if you need it." Blah 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 blah. And I was just like, not your fault, but you should definitely work on it.
I was half expecting him to be like, you're a bitch if you don't get mental health.
No.
Mental health. It's a joke, people. But seriously, go talk to somebody. We all deal with shit. And there you go.
Kidding.
End scene.
No, I'm
kidding. All right. Let's get you out of here. Let's get me out of here. This was so much fun. As you heard, you didn't really have to defend emo music all that much, but I told you what I don't like about it. I told you we've established in our years of friendship at this point that the genre is just not something I appreciate. But there are several albums that I do like that are on this list. So So there you go.
I think in the same way that, like, it's not for everyone. You're not the target demographic. I was definitely the target demographic, but also probably because I could have gotten groomed. So
yeah.
No, I truthfully though, I do appreciate you asking me to do this episode with you. I was definitely prepared to advocate a lot more, like a lot harder for the genre, like in defense of the genre. But truthfully, like I totally get, like, it's whiny, it's loud, it's all over the place. It's not everyone's cup of tea. I completely get it. But also I know a lot of people who would say the same thing about metal. So
oh, absolutely. I've heard that my entire life.
Right.
I still hear it.
And you just learn to be like, hey, that's for you. That's not your thing. It's my thing. Live and let live, man.
Different strokes, people. That's what this podcast is all about. If you don't like it, you don't have to like it.
At the end of the day, we can playfully jab, but I still respect his opinion as a person.
And there you go. And going back to what you're saying about people being upset that we're talking about it, Ruben, I know another person that's probably going to be mega upset about it, which is my buddy Mike Caldwell, who is a huge, and I mean probably an even bigger, fan of pop punk and emo than you. Yes.
I don't know about that.
He was just at a show that I'm sure all the bands you fucking know, I'm not going to name them because I don't know them, but he regularly attends emo concerts all the fucking time.
Love that for him.
Yeah. He loves Blink-182. He loves all that shit. He listens. A lot of the bands that he listens to, he's like, I think you'll like this one. I never did. So, but.
Here's the thing, though. Same thing like we were talking about this whole fucking episode. Like, I was such a diehard pop punk fan when I was like a teenager. And I went through this phase where like I didn't listen to it for a super long time. And now I feel, for me personally, it's more like I listen to it for nostalgia purposes.
Right.
More than like this is something that I like because I like it. Like it's almost like it's a comfort because it's something that like I've known for so long. I do find myself like gravitating more towards like hardcore and like metalcore type shit now.
Yeah.
In terms of just like, again, it's a jumping off point for a lot of people. And also my diehard will always die on this hill is 80s alternative and new wave. Like that is always going to be number one here. So
you got no arguments here. I love it as well. on that real quick with Caldwell, as we call him, I introduced him to the Spill Canvas. So that's my
wow.
One. I know. And I was like, here's a band you may not know. And I played him and he was like, what? How do you like this band? You don't like any of the bands I listen to. But I was like, cause they suck. Anyway.
Oh, wow. Getting your emo cred.
There you go. I got one singular emo cred. I have one.
One. You get one patch, just like an one. Achievement award.
Yep. That's my that is my patch. My
hell yeah.
My Boy Scouts emo patch is recommending the Spill Canvas to an emo fan that never listened to them.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, this has been a lot of fun. This is a Retired Mosher podcast. If you guys can do me a favor, please like, please subscribe, go to Instagram, like the video. If you're listening on iTunes and Spotify, anything you can rate, please give me 5 stars. Helps me get exposure. All that good stuff. I'm sorry if you had to listen to an hour and a half of us talking about emo music. I promise you, metalheads, I will return to metal next time. This was a one-off. It was something that needed to happen.
It's a palate cleanser.
It's a palate cleanser. And you know what? I like a lot of other stuff too. So if you want to talk about hip-hop or you want to talk about ska, I guess. I don't really know it that well. Fucking hit me up and you can be on this podcast too and I'll talk that shit with you as well. Anyway, yeah. Where can they find you, Miss Alex Webster?
Okay, as I was so illustriously introduced at the top of the episode, I am the super producer for the Horrible People's Network. We are a network of podcasts. Basically, it's our group of friends just shooting the shit, doing cool stuff. James is also on 2 of them and frequents 3 of them.
Yes, I do.
James is a frequent guest on the flagship podcast, Horrible People's Podcast. We talk about spooky movies. Check that out. And we also both are on Turning Tables Podcast, which is an actual play D&D podcast that we are having so much fun with it. I have all of your shenanigans planned for tomorrow. I cannot wait. So check that out. James is also on the NPC Gaming Podcast.
I was gonna say I didn't even plug that one. Whatever, go for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna plug your shit for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, that, you know, that's the stuff. That's, and then also Hops and Notes, which is, if you like this podcast, you're definitely gonna like Hops and Notes. It's ran by our friend Danny, and he talks about, he pairs beer and music. And if you want to hear more of me, I am on so many of those episodes because I love talking about music. So it's a beer pairing and an album pairing, and they go together great. So
there you go. Please go check out the Horrible People's Network. As Alex stated, I am on 2, sometimes 3 podcasts on there. It's a lot of fun. There's things for everybody. Plot Armor Plus, Ruben's podcast.
Yeah, if you like anime, if you like anime, he's doing that. That's awesome. And then if you want to find just me as a person, I am on Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop or Ghost Bookshop. If you want to look at me make quilts and talk books, which is my, I am 29 going on 73.
There you go. Go look at that stuff too. And again, Retired Mosher Pod on Instagram. Go give it a follow. Do all the good stuff. Give me likes because I'm addicted to it. Anyway, thanks you guys so much for listening and tuning in on YouTube. This is the second YouTube video. There's going to be a lot more coming. I'm a busy man. I'm trying to keep up with
all. He's doing his best. Like I said, he's on like 5 podcasts, okay? Like, cut him some slack.
This is true. But anyway, thank you guys very much. Later.
Thanks for having me. Bye.